got to understand, man, the path is not smooth. You know what I mean? I went through hell and back more than once, you know? And it was because of hell and back more than once that allows me to get here, right? Why my drawdowns are so low, why my discipline is so good, you know, is because of the hell and back thing when they weren't, when my drawdowns weren't low and my discipline wasn't good, right? You almost have to go through that first to get there, you know? No one's born a great trader. You're just going to start trading great from day one and you just, hey, smooth sailing from here on out. Because the more success you have at it, you know what I'm going to say, right? I mean, the better you get at it, the cockier you're going to get, the more sure yourself going to get, and then the market's going to hand you something that you never freaking were ready for. So sure, I made a bunch of money because I was young and stupid and I leveraged the hell out of it, right? And I made a bunch of money. Does that mean I was smart? It actually means I was stupid, as it turned out. You know, I mean, it took me 8 months to lose all that money, right?
Welcome to the Alpha Mind Podcast with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall. Our guest this week is one of the market wizards featured in Jack Schrader's most recent installment of the Market Wizard series, Unknown Market Wizards. I mean, if you enjoyed that little introduction piece at the very beginning, I can tell you we had so many outtakes from this interview that it became a problem trying to select just one for the starting clip. Now, Shapiro is a 30-year veteran of the markets. In the book, he's termed the contrarian by Schrader. And in fact, I'm not going to expand on the introduction too much because I'm sure you want to get straight into this one. I will just say one thing. The interview starts hot and just gets hotter. So do stay with this one. I know from my own podcast listening experience how easy it can be to tune out or turn off after 15 or 20 minutes with the idea that you're going to come back to it and you forget. Don't make that mistake with this one. I promise you. This is great from the beginning to the end. Before we start, a few words about our sponsor, the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, and their brilliant Technical Analysis Home Study Course. The Home Study Course is an online version of the full programme, which is taught at the London School of Economics. If you are keen to develop your technical analysis skills and take your knowledge and understanding of them to the very highest level, then this is the programme you should be considering. As one of the lecturers on the full programme, I am fully aware of the high quality of the Home Study Course, which has been written in partnership with many leading figures from the world of technical analysis. And since the STA is a not-for-profit body with a history going back over 50 years, you can be certain their only agenda is your education, development, and growth. We are delighted to announce that the STA are offering a discount on the full cost of the Home Study Course and the Home Study Course and Diploma Program to listeners of the Alpha Mind podcast. To find out more about the Home Study Course and how to get the exclusive Alpha Mind discount, visit the Alpha Mind blog page where you will find a link to the Home Study Course at the top of the page. Go to alphamindblog.blogspot.com or just Google Alpha Mind Blog. Now, on with this week's podcast.
Hey, guys. Well, welcome to this week's Alpha Mind podcast. And we've got yet another unknown market wizard with us. Market Wizard series of books, of course, you'll know from Jack Schrader. If you don't know, then you need to get into that portfolio. And the most recent edition of Jack's work is the Unknown Market Wizards, in which Jason Shapiro sits amongst a whole bunch of peers that are clearly performing to the point of getting noticed on Jack Swager's radar, which is significant based upon the people that he's interviewed in the past. But we really look forward to this chat with Jason. Curiosity, being smart is where your edge is. There's a lot of stuff that Jason can tell us about that. He looks at stuff that I know a lot of professionals look at, but I think will be perhaps a good reveal in terms of just revealing some of the stuff that he looks at in something called the Crowded Market Report, which is a really sort of pathfinder piece of work. So, Jason, welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a bit more about your story.
What do you want to know? I'm 53. I've been trading since I'm about 22. I don't know how far you want to go back. It probably gets boring at a certain point, and most of it was kind of in that Jack Schrader book anyway. But I guess suffice it to say there's been a lot of ups, a lot of downs, and we're still fighting somehow.
And taking knocks on the journey, taking trophies out of the market as well. There have been moments that obviously have been great for you. But of course, I think one of the things that I picked up from that storyline in Jack's book was just that, you know, the commitment of Trader Report that is out there. There's a 3-day lag on the data and whatnot. However, being able to look at it and to have a bigger insight than perhaps most people would get out of just looking at charts. And I know that some professionals out there, particularly when we got into option expirations, a lot of them guess watch those reports to see where position bias is. But you know, you're putting a trading model in place essentially on the back of what the CFTC is producing. Perhaps you can give us a bit of background about that in particular.
So, you know, to me, where do you get an edge in the market, right? The market's a discounting mechanism, okay? So it discounts the future. We all know that. So how do you get an edge? For me, the discounting mechanism, I believe, in not just markets, but essentially anything that you can place a bet on, is participation. You know, people will look at price and say, hey, you know, whatever, this asset's gone from 50 to 200. So therefore it's discounted in all the good news, right? I don't really look at that like that. I look at it as, well, everyone in the world is long this market. So therefore it's discounted in all the good news, right? I mean, the market moves based on money, no matter what they want to tell you, based on money going in and money going out, right? Tops of markets always are when things look best, and bottoms by definition are always when things look worse, right? So if you're a fundamental trader, you know, you end up being a trend follower because you get the meat. Okay, the market bottoms, suddenly things start to look better and, you know, you'll slowly get on board, right? I'm picking the market turns. So being that I think that the discounting method is one of participation, where do you find out the participation? And, you know, there's a few ways in theory, but one of the ways certainly is the Commitments of Traders report, because it shows where people are. You know, hey, these guys are long, these guys are short, and you can look at it relative to history. How long are they? How short are they based on where they've been in the past? And so that's why I like to use that data pretty extensively. You know, it gives me what I'm looking for. You know, I sit here and I can listen to the TV all day and listen to what people are talking about. I mean, it becomes pretty obvious. What are they talking about, you know, now, right? Inflation. Everybody's talking about inflation and copper prices and all this kind of stuff, right? But talking about it and being positioned for it can be two different things, right? So I like to see when they're actually super positioned for it, and therefore they've discounted all of that in. And that, to me, skews the risk-reward the other way. It doesn't guarantee anything, but it skews the risk-reward so that if the market keeps going, I get stopped out for a little loss. If the market turns and does go the other way, well, then, you know, there's a potential for a nice trade there. So that's kind of how I use the data.
If I could just sort of butt in there for a second, welcome again to the F-Man podcast. It's great to have you on. It's an honor. We always love having people who, you know, have got their hands seriously dirty over the years. And that certainly is the case for you. And just to repeat what Mark said about the crowded market report, I took a little look at that earlier on, and it's a great website you've got there, crowdedmarketreport.com, for anyone Thanks. Listening for this. There's a great quote on there from Voltaire. Uncertainty is an uncomfortable position, but certainty is an absurd one.
Yeah.
I mean, that just jumps off the page at me.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we put it on there, you know. And it gets to the point of, you know, what we tried to do with this website. You know, once the Schwager book came out, obviously, you know, people started hitting me up on LinkedIn and everywhere, you know, hey, can you help me to trade? Can you help me learn about trading? Can you this, you know, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of people, right? And I'd love to help people. I've gotten help in my life. And I kind of, at this age, you know, understand the lesson of you have to pass it along, right? People helped me And now I'd like to help you, but I can't help 400 people all at the same time, you know, sitting on LinkedIn, helping each one of them trade. Hey, buy S&P here. Hey, sell corn. You know, it's impossible. I'm running a business. You know what I mean? I have a family. So we started this webpage so that all, could all be done in one place. I write the newsletter that sort of talks about which markets are crowded, which I've always done, right? For myself, I did it always just as a part of my discipline every weekend. And then when I worked at a hedge fund, I kind of, you know, gave it to the people that worked there just to see if they had any interest. And at one point when I ran a CTA, I had a few clients who were actually hedge fund managers themselves. So I used to distribute that to them as well. So I've always done it. So to put it on the website is simple. What wasn't in the plan with that, but which ended up being very good, was the guy who started this website and did it all. He included like one of these Discord chat pages on there. So we're able to go on there and we chat and we end up chatting about all of these other things, you know, market psychology. I mean, it's not just like, hey, buy this here, sell this here. That's stupid. And I try to explain to these people, that's not what you should be here to do anyway, right? Because it's the old thing. I give a man a fish, teach a man a fish, right? It's the old story, right? And not only that, but just because I trade this way doesn't necessarily mean that you should trade this way. But hopefully this data can help you, A, help you in your own way. And B, we also talk a lot about risk management and psychology of the trades. And, you know, I take them through as I go through trades, my psychology. And now we've got some other people on there too that are taking through what they do. And I'm learning just as much from these guys as they're learning from me, truthfully. Because we have a few people that have gotten on there that are, you know, we have beginner traders, intermediate traders, and some advanced traders. But how do you even define that? Advanced traders lose money all the time too, right? So that's become what I really like about this thing is that's become a really good thing. So I forget what the original question was, but I was trying to answer it.
There wasn't really a question. It was more a comment about this this wonderful phrase that jumped off the
Oh, right. So that page. Was the point of the phrase was that you could come on my website, oh, because I'm a market wizard and I put up good returns and all that stuff. But the bottom line is, I'm still not certain about anything. You know what I mean?
That's what I love about trading, though, isn't it? People think there's an answer.
No,
there's not. But there's a way, and that way is different for everyone, depending who they are.
Yes.
And, you know, what jumped off the story in Jack Schrager's book was about you being a contrarian. And you, in a way, you've been a contrarian all your life. There's a story of you getting kicked out of several schools almost, losing your job because you weren't. It feels like you weren't a conformist.
A non-conformist, I think we can definitely call it that.
Yeah.
I think my mommy would approve with that word.
Yeah, and I mean, that was great, actually. Your mum was a child psychologist, and, you know, it was almost like you were the best case study.
I was actually a case study in one of the things that she went through one time.
But it's fascinating because so many people that come to trading are that. They don't want to work for people. They want to work for themselves. They want to go their own way. They want to cut their own path.
Yeah.
They don't want to report to anyone.
Right.
You know, I mean, God knows how many people I've told, you know, spoke to manage money for people and then realize it's just like working for someone. And I think you kind of allude to that in there as well.
Yeah, if not worse sometimes. I mean, that's a great dream. Is that a possible dream? You know, I don't really think so. Inherit a whole bunch of money and trade your own money. Now you don't got to talk to anybody, right? other than that, you know, it's a semi-impossible dream. I've gotten a little bit closer, I have to say, recently. You know, I did finally get to sort of the dream and left this hedge fund and started this CTA, and it was pretty big CTA, and we probably could have grown into even a bigger CTA. And I had all these people working for me, and it was a nightmare. It was horrible with all the people that I had to deal with, right? So I had shut that down. When I restarted my current CTA, which was only about a year and a half ago, I'm extremely lucky this time through because, I mean, but again, it all fits in together, right? I have great clients who understand what it is I do and why I'm in their portfolio. Right. Mm-hmm. If I have a losing month, if I have three losing months, right, they're not going to just call me up and say I suck at trading and fire me. Right. If I have three losing months where I'm theoretically supposed to make money, where contrarian trades are making money and markets are reversing and all that. Right. Well, then I do suck and they should fire me and I'm fine with that. Right. But when I ran my old CTA, it was like that. People just were chasing you. Oh, you came out of this big hedge fund. Oh, you made all this money. Oh, okay, we'll give you money. Without really, and I had to take it because I had all these people working for me and I had this huge nut I had to cover, right? And it was a nightmare. It almost killed me. So this time around, I was able to get some really good clients who understand. And I say, and it's fortunate because I learned all, you know, it all comes from learning lessons. Even the trading stuff that I talk about in this book, right? The winning trades come from learning from the losing trades, right? It's the same thing. I was able to build this business this way now because of the stuff I learned in the past, right? Which is, I don't have anybody working for me, so I don't have a huge nut, right? In fact, I have no nut. I have no personal, I have no mortgage, I have no car payment, I have nothing, right? I don't have a vacation home that I have to make a second mortgage payment on. You know, I don't have anything, right? So therefore, I didn't need to take money in. You know, I was already managing an account for a group in New York and, you know, I was making a good living doing that and I didn't need to take any money in, right? And so when we took this money in, I can, on a marketing point of view, I can tell these people all these things, you know? Look, don't give me money if you don't understand this. Do me a favor and don't give me money if you don't understand why I'm doing this for you, right? What this does to your portfolio, right? And I've been making this argument about the portfolio effect since I started, you know, in 2000, I guess, I took my first assets in. It was from Helmut Weimer, the guy who started Commodities Corporation, who understood all this stuff. And I mean, he was so into it. He was like, look, you should charge people fees based on your non-correlation, right? Based on the alpha that you add to your portfolio, charge them fees on that. And he's 100% right. But trying to get people to understand that concept, there's almost a zero chance to get people to do that, right?
Yeah.
As I've learned, right?
If they understood it, they do it themselves, I think, most of the time.
I guess. They say they do, but... So anyway, this time around, I've been able to get some very good clients who understand why I'm in there. And so therefore, I can just do what I do, you know? And that's another thing that I explain to the people sort of on the website when they're looking, what do you think of this trade? What do you think of that? I'm like, you have to understand, I'm getting paid for a very specific purpose, right? Positive returns, yes. Great, you know, hopefully return to drawdown, yes. But non-correlation is the main reason why people are giving me money. So if I lose money for a few months, you know what I mean? As long as it's in a period where sort of everybody else is making money, it's not the worst thing for me. I don't get paid because I don't charge management fees. I do all incentive fee. But for you as an individual trader, that's not going to help you at all. You know what I mean? You're not going to be able to say, oh, I just lost, you know, whatever my account, but it's okay because it's not correlated to anything. Like, that's not going to work on an individual basis, right? It works for me because that's what my clients are looking for. They make 10%, I lose 1%. They lose 10%, I make 15%. If I can do that, then I'm exactly what they need in their portfolio, right? But again, on an individual basis, that doesn't necessarily work for people individually, which is what I try to impress on them. Don't come to me to tell you what trades to make. Let's talk about trading. Let's talk about psychology. Let's talk about process. Let's talk about all that. That's what's going to make you a better trader.
So, what jumps off the page in the first couple of minutes of this podcast interview, and I can see it in your face, Jason, and I can hear it in your voice, is this passion that you have for trading. I mean, this is going to be a great podcast, I can tell, and I'm sure you're still going to be on fire an hour from now as we come to the end of this.
I mean, I hope so, that I have those things, because I do sit here 18 hours a day doing this shit, and I have sat here 18 hours a day doing this stuff, you know, for 30 years. So if there's not some of that stuff, well, then what the hell am I doing, right? Because there's a hell of a lot easier ways to make money. You know, which I just said last week, you know, last Wednesday, I think it was, when the CPI number came out and stock markets went down a whole bunch, and which is fine. But other things that I had also went against me. I just had a horrible day after like building up. I was doing great. And then all of a sudden you have one horrible day and I'm sitting there that night going, man, I should have been a doctor. You know, not just being a doctor is an easy thing to do. But you can do it. You can go to work and you're going to get paid at the end of the day, right? This is pure pain, right? It's pure pain. Maybe I like pain. I don't know what it is, but it really comes down to, I don't know what it comes down to. You know, contrarian thinking works in this type of thing, right? So if it wasn't for this, I don't know what I would do. I've had jobs, you know. I started off the first job I ever got, and I didn't come from a very good college, but I got a really good job when I came out of school working for HSBC, and I could have sat there and done the HSBC thing, and I was in their elite executive program and all that, and I could have lived all over the world on their dime, and you know, okay, I never would have been a multi-millionaire, but I would have had a pretty nice life, you know. But I lasted less than a year there, you know, and I would last less than a year there now too. You know, it wasn't just a question of immaturity. You know, it was just a question of you can't be a contrarian in that. I mean, HSBC, their whole attitude is we've done it this way for 200 years and it seems to work pretty good, which we can argue now. But back then, they were the biggest bank in the world. So, you know, don't just do what we tell you to do. They had GYM, the group instruction manual, and that's all you were supposed to do. It was this wide, you know what I mean? Follow the GYM, do what you're supposed to do, right? So I don't really get along in that kind of environment. So I'm fortunate that in trading, sort of being contrarian works. And that's an old adage, right? Be as contrarian as you can. It's one thing to say it, it's another thing to do it. So it was a combination of I was always that way, and it happens to work in this arena. So miraculously, the two of us came together. Without this, I really don't know. I'd be getting fired from jobs, which is what I did my whole life. Even hedge funds would fire me because I was such a, you know, let's call it independent thinker.
There was so much I wanted to say, and I want to jump to you in a minute, Mark, as well, because I'm sure what Jason was talking about there must have struck you as well. But you know what struck me a little bit there, apart from your passion, was the message you're giving out there for this audience. You know, we've got an audience out there of experienced traders, young traders, new traders, wannabe traders, all trying to learn this lesson, you know, and they all want to be like you. They all want Jack Schrager to knock on their door one day and say, you know, 20, 25 years, hey, I want to write about you. You know, that means they've made it, right? And here you are going, last week I sucked, you know?
I sucked today. We don't even go back to last week. I'm looking at my P&L right now.
That's what trading is all about, you know, to think you're not going to have a bad day, a losing day, bad runs. It's not, it's the aggregate, it's the whole. You know, yes. You don't just change your process because you have a bad day or a bad week or even a bad month. You know,
no.
It's the process that brings the money, I presume.
Yes. And it's not just trading. You know, I mean, it becomes very hard as a trader to deal with the world, because the truth is that's how everything is, right? I've been involved in other businesses and I've been involved with other people and I've had different partners and I've had different employees, right? And that message right there, I consistently try to get across to people, and they don't take it, right? It's not about what we do today. It's about what we do every day. It has to be done every day. And the success might not come in a week or in a month or in a quarter or in a year. But if we do the process every day, and we wake up every morning and say, well, let's do the right thing today and let's do the right thing tomorrow. And the next day there's a big problem and we have a choice. Do we freak out about it, yell at each other and figure out who's to blame? Or do we just get the business and solve it? Like, that's all I ever say to anybody. Let's solve it. Where's the solve? That's all that matters, right? Then in time, there's a better chance that it will work out.
I want to high five you right now. I wish I could.
Yeah. But people can't get through that because they can't get through the today, right? I need money today. That's all great in theory, but I need money today. Okay, great. So do I, right? I had a guy say to me, he goes, oh, I just need to make, like, this guy had a bunch of money before and he lost it all. And, you know, he's broke and he lost his house and he still has the wife who wants to spend all the money and he's in a sort of a bad spot. He's like, I just need to make a quick $2 million. I'm like, who doesn't? Like, what, are you serious? I need to make a quick $2 million too. Who doesn't need to make a quick $2 million? But you don't make a quick $2 million, right? Go to work today, go to work tomorrow, go to work the next day, and hopefully over time, you'll make your $2 million, right? But going into it with the attitude, oh, I just need to make a quick $2 million? Me too. You know, who doesn't? You can go to Carl Icahn and ask him if he'd like to make a quick $2 million. I'm sure he'd say yes, right? So,
you know, focus.
For some reason, can't get over that. And you learn all these lessons through trading, right? It humbles you so much, right, that these lessons become very pronounced in trading. You can hide from these lessons a lot of times and other things, I feel like. With trading, you can. It's so in your face right there. P&L is so in your face, and getting paid on performance is so in your face, right? That you have to learn these lessons if you want to succeed at this, I think. You know, it's like I said, I can teach you how I trade here. I sell things when they do this. I buy things. That's not really going to do you any good unless you learn all these other things, right? So,
Mark, over to you, because you must be hearing this and you must want to jump in there.
Well, the energy is just tangible, right? The attitude is just tangible. That positivity is tangible. But, you know, when someone lights up like a Christmas tree when they talk about something, you know, you know it's kind of, it means something to them. And this stuff, clearly, Jason, just it means something to you. It's kind of like you've just aligned your energy to this. I wouldn't even call it profession. It's almost like this vocation, this hobby that you've thrown at, and the benefit is, okay, there's a positive outcome a lot of the time from it. But actually, the energy comes from that. You know, having that purpose and finding that path, is not a thing that everyone can do. But you've found it in the world of trading, and I guess that if you've got that sort of thing driving you, it's not only driving you to be a better trader, it's driving you to do other things in the wide expanse of life in a better way as well. You know, when you feel as though you've got through the path. Yeah, you agree with that?
I like to agree with that, yes. Yes. I mean, this is, it's just a microcosm of life. You know what I mean? How do you want to approach life, right? And again, this becomes, it's just like anything when you're in the minority. Being a contrarian by definition means you're in the minority, right? So being in the minority is a very tough place to be, psychologically over time in life, because it doesn't matter where you're at. People are not going to agree with you. And if they're not going to agree with you, they're going to think you're a jerk, because you don't agree with them. You must be a jerk, right? Which again is another part of it. I don't feel that way about people. I encourage people to disagree with me. That, how else do I learn, right? But people don't like that. They don't like to be disagreed with, right? You look at what's going on with the politics, you know, now, right? You're one or you're the other, and there's no middle. And if you're the other, then I'm not talking to you. That's how these people are, right? And it's horrible, right? And it's the same thing. That might work today, but in the long term, that's going to blow up the whole thing. I mean, I argue with you. The only thing I argue politics with is, I say to both all these people, you're the problem, okay? Not because you're Republican or conservative, or not because you're Democrat and liberal. That's not the problem. The problem is that you can't allow anybody else to think any different than you. That doesn't make any sense to me, right? I was sitting with a guy who lives in Seattle, which is, you know, historically a pretty liberal place, right? And he's a super liberal guy. And he was saying, we were sitting there with his daughter and his daughter's friend, who are college students. And he was telling me how he thinks. He's like, you know, I just believe in diversity. I believe in diversity. You know, it's a big liberal line. I believe in diversity. I don't care what color people are, and I don't care what religion they are. You know, I believe in diversity. Okay, that's a great thing to believe in. And it couldn't have been 3 minutes later. We were talking about, you know, people that live out in the country and the farmers and how they're all Trumpers and all that. He goes, you know what we should do? Forget about building a wall in Mexico. We should build a wall around the cities and not let those people in. I'm like, okay, so you believe in diversity, but just not diversity of thought, right? You don't care what color people are. You don't care what religion they are. You don't care what country they are. As long as they think like you, then they're allowed inside your little city wall. The second they think different, you know, now you don't want them inside your wall. Like, do you not see how stupid that is? And do you not see how that's the problem? And then, of course, at that point, the guy hates me and the conversation's over, right?
That's something that only traders can read. I think often, you know, this, you're right, this job humbles you and it teaches you these things. You know, there's a line in the book where you say, don't have an opinion. And when you meet all of the successful traders, that they will say things, they will have attitudes and philosophies so similar to that. I know Peter Brandt says, you know, strong opinions loosely held. I think that was the title of his chapter. And you know, I know people that say, you know, not knowing is okay. And these guys are apparently they're paid to know, according to everyone.
you think you're going to make a living predicting the future, you've got another thing coming. Okay. Nostradamus is a myth, right?
Yep.
So you better, and I think I saw a thing, I think it was by Druckenmiller, where he said that. He said, look, I'm wrong so often, I have to figure out how to make money, you know, without being right. I have to make money some other way, right? Because I'm wrong all the time, right? And again, that becomes the whole thing. As a trader, or at least a trader that's been around for a while, is going to know that, right? 99.9% of the normal people out there are not going to know that. They want to be right. You know, they want to push their opinion. They want, and of course, then they'll go out and they'll find the data that proves that their opinion's right, whether, you know, because that's what people do, right? They gravitate towards the data that prove that they're right, rather than to look at all the data with an open mind and say, oh, well, maybe I was wrong. And then they never learn, and they just keep digging themselves down the same path, and they never have to admit they're wrong because they never look at anything that says they're wrong, right? You can't do that as a trader. You know what I mean? You just can't do it. You'll be dead. You know, you'll be dead because the P&L shows up every day. Your opinion doesn't make a bit of difference. I can sit here and be short corn and come out with a million reasons why being short corn is the greatest trade on earth. And if corn keeps going up and I don't admit I'm wrong, well, then I'm going to be sitting here with all my great pieces about how corn should be going down, and corn's going to go up 10 times and I'm going to be working a different job. You know?
That's why you said don't fight the tape. And that is so true.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one thing you can't fight is the tape. You can fight opinion.
Yes.
You can fight yourself, but you can't fight the tape.
Yes. But it's like you say, that's what supposedly people are getting paid to do, right? I mean, you look at all these Wall Street analysts, they come out with these reports and they explain why all these things are this, that, and the other thing. And that's what they're getting paid to do, to have an opinion based on supposedly, you know, facts. But again, the market's a discounting mechanism. So the question is, if you can find those facts, and hey, you're a smart guy, you went to Harvard, you got a Harvard MBA, whatever, you were at the top of your class, and you've been working in the oil industry for 30 years, you know everything there is to know about oil and all that stuff, great. But there's a million people out there like that, right? I mean, there's a lot of smart people out there that got MBAs from wherever, and have been in the industry a long time. You know, I think it was Kovner that said it in the first book. If I can figure this out, then doesn't that mean that everybody else can figure this out? And then doesn't that mean that maybe I should be going the other way, right? So that's kind of what I do, right? And, you know, people hate it. You know, well, what do you think the market's going to do? My answer is always, I have no idea, right? And they're like, well, are you a hedge fund manager? I'm like, that's why I'm a hedge fund manager still, right? Because I have no idea. And clearly, no one
understands. It's interesting. It's interesting because in a way, what you're doing is you're looking for asymmetric risks. That's how I understand
exactly
it.
Exactly what I'm doing.
And you're using sentiment indicators or sentiment analysis in the form of the commitment of traders report, along with, you know, I think it's fair to say you use price action, you use your knowledge of the market and the products, you bring everything together. But it feels like that's your number one tool. Is that correct? I mean, Mark,
more than sentiment, that's the thing. Sentiment's one thing. There's plenty of sentiment polls out there. How many bulls are there? How many bears are there? More important to me is, have they actually put their money in there? So it's positioning, which is a function of sentiment, right? But positioning, like now, all anybody is talking about is inflation and commodities and all that. So therefore, do I short them? Well, I want to short them, but my positioning stuff is not saying to short them yet. So I will wait, A, for the positioning stuff to get there, and B, then for the market to confirm that whole thing. The positioning is not enough, right? The positioning, let's say, puts the odds in your favor. But just like anything else, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. It's not putting the odds 100% in your favor, right? Maybe it's putting them 60% in your favor, you know? But now you need sort of market confirmation too. Don't fight the tape, right? So the two of those, positioning and market confirmation, because that way, when the positioning is so much, everyone in the world is long, should the thing start to drop, which I will wait until it starts to get the market confirmation, right? And if that can continue, now you've got everybody long. Now you've got trend followers who have defined rules on where they get stopped. Here's the 50-day, the 100-day, the 200-day, whatever it is. They all start getting whip, 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 boom, and there's no one left to buy it because they already are long, right? So the move gets extended the other way. And that's what I catch. Now it takes me, you know, I think it's 37% of my trades is the number that make money, right? It's not a very high number, right? But if I lose a dollar 63 times, and I make $5 37 times, you count that up over 100 trades, it's a very nice return, right?
That's It's terrific, yeah.
And that's really what I do. It doesn't come out to five times. It comes out to about somewhere around four times, 4-to-1 per trade, my risk return. But even 4-to-1 at 37.63, you know, you can do the math, and I just need 100 trades, right? So now I have to be patient for those 100 trades.
We will return to the podcast shortly. First, a quick word about our podcast sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. We are delighted to be able to promote their brilliant STA Technical Analysis Home Study Course. Listeners to the AlphaMan podcast interested in studying for the Home Study Course can get an exclusive discount by visiting the AlphaMan blog page, where they can find a link to the Home Study Course at the top of the page. Go to alphamindblog.blogspot.com or just Google AlphaMan blog. Now back to this week's podcast.
And you're not always contrarian, are you? Just to sort of clarify that, I know we call you a contrarian and we're on there, but I get a sense you're pro-trend sometimes when you think there's value there. Would that be a fair description?
Not really. See, I'm not always counter-trend.
Not always right? Counter-trend, okay.
But I am always contrarian, right?
Okay.
If there's a trend,
yep.
But nobody's long it, right? Then I'm probably going to be with it, right? I mean, if you take two markets that look exactly the same on the chart, okay, this is not anything that's hard to understand, right? They look exactly the same on the chart. Here's the chart of this one. Here's the chart of this one. 100% correlation. This one, everyone in the world is long, and this one, no one's long. You tell me which one's going to outperform from here. If you really think that the one that everyone in the world is long, I mean, does everyone in the world make excess returns? No. Nobody makes excess returns, so you want to be the one in the one that nobody's in and not in the one that everybody's in, right? So I'll be with the trend. Look, I'm long stocks now. How long have stocks been going up for, right? But people haven't jumped onto this. I've been long stocks essentially almost every day. And most of my trades don't last that way. But since the lows when I got long in March, right? Most of my trades do not last that long. But for whatever reason, and I've switched. I've been long NASDAQ for a while, and then they kind of got too long NASDAQ, but they weren't long Dow. I was long Dow, and then I'm long Russell, you know. But one way or another, I've pretty much been long stocks every day since March, right? And why is that? That's not because I think stocks are going up. It's because the commitment to traders data is telling me people are not getting excessively long this stuff. So, and they should be by now. I mean, wouldn't you think by now people would be going crazy getting long? Everybody wants to compare this to 2000, right? But I was around in 2000. This is not the same situation. And it's not to say the market can't go down from here. It'll probably top tick right after I just said that, right? But, you know, this is not the same, right? Back then, I was there, you know. That's all anybody talked about was the stock market. All anybody talks about now is when is the stock market going to crash? You know, when I talk to my friends who are not market related people and they're sitting on their 401ks or whatever, and they're riding index funds, that's all they ever ask me. When is the market going to crash? When is the market going to crash? And I'm always like, as soon as you stop asking that, you know, and not until then, right? If you're already discounting in a crash, how is it going to crash, right? Oh, well, I remember in 2000, I go, yeah, but in 2000, you weren't asking me when it was going to crash. I remember specifically because you were all getting pissed at me because I kept telling you guys this was a huge bubble that was going to end really ugly. And you all kept telling me I was a loser because you're making 15% a month and I'm not making anything, right? So back then, that's the crash, right? Now it's like you've learned that lesson. So now you want to be prepared for it this time. So that's why it won't happen this time, right? That's how I feel anyway. That's contrarian, right? And it's all contrarian because it's goes back to the discounting, right? People want to argue with me about what makes a market move. To me, it's all about participation. You know, I think I might have talked about in Jack's book, but I used to bet a football system that did the same thing, right? It just took a survey of how many people were betting this team and how many people were betting this team. You know, 30 people who bet against the spread, and if 27 or more were betting the same way, I bet the opposite way blindly, right? Because the point spread adjusts. If so many people are betting one side, then the point spread adjusts, right? Just like the price of an asset adjusts, right? And it will adjust too much on an odds basis if all the people are one-sided like that. And that used to make money. The problem was it would only put out about 5 or 6 bets a year, right? Which isn't really enough to diversify your bets. You know, you can always lose on one of them and all that. So, but it's the same thing. That's how I look at everything. And that's all I ever listen to is what people are saying, because I'm looking for a consensus. It's not about you individually or stupid. It's actually about you individually or smart. And so are the other 40 people that came on TV and said the same exact thing that you said today, right? So now I'm looking to go the other way.
So there's an observational aspect to this. So watching like, you know, CNBC, that stuff for picking up on what people are saying is part of the equation of guess watching market mood to then determine, you know, what the contrary view is. But a question, if they switched off the commitment of traders report, what would you do? You'd guess tune into a different type of observational process, no?
I'd just trade off of the TV. You know, I would still need market confirmation anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I would trade off of the I just listen to these people on the TV, or what I read on the internet, or what you read on Twitter, or what you read on whatever, LinkedIn, you know what I mean? I would use that as my sort of sentiment participation index. And then I would wait for market confirmation before I could ever short it, you know? I mean, look, I've got a guy on LinkedIn that I've been following for 4 years, okay? He's paper trading, all right? And he has this live paper trade account that you can watch, right? In 4 years, he's blown out 3 accounts to zero. And this year he's down 35%. Now, if I had done nothing but taken the opposite of his trades, I'd be up 100% 3 years in a row. He had one run where he made 40%. So, which was when COVID happened. He had something on, I don't remember what it was, but whatever. COVID happened and he caught it. It wasn't short stocks, but it was something. So whatever, the last 3 years, I'd be up 100% a year with 140% drawdown. I tell you what, that's a lot better than I've actually done. And I put a lot more work into it than just, you know, taking the opposite of him, right? So if you find him and you find 20 others like him, it's really all you need, right? The problem with him is I don't know when he's going away, or, you know what I mean? I don't know. I can't count on that. What I wanted to do was pay him to work for me, have him trade through me, and tell him he has to place all his orders through our central trading desk, right? And then I know exactly what he's doing. And, you know, you laugh, but that's a guaranteed winner. Guaranteed winner. Imagine if I'm sitting here and I'm up 100% a year for the last 3 years.
Didn't you work in a hedge fund where that was the case, where you said the traders were so bad, all I had to do was fade them all day long?
I wouldn't necessarily call that place a hedge fund, but it was a money management firm, theoretically.
Right.
And yeah, they were bad. And they also ended up, I don't think they ended up in jail, but they ended up getting arrested by the FBI for insider trading because they were so bad. They were trying to figure out how to do something to make money.
Maybe this is quite relevant because, I mean, I had a client that had like 10 billion euro portfolio that was awful. And like everything it did was just like, it gets, you know, you bet the opposite way, you'd have made money. So that, you know, it's not a surprise. You know, we all say that like 95% of the market lose it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's my whole thing. If you're just the opposite them, right, then you may. So how do you get opposite?
You know what? This reminds me of a story, and I may have told this before, and I've got to be quite careful. And I may have mentioned the bank last time, but I was at a dinner about nearly 20 years ago now. That's how long ago this was. And it was a large dinner put on by one of the biggest tier one investment banks, US investment banks in the FX markets. They had a huge offsite with thousands of clients all invited. And I found myself on the table with the head of FX for this bank, global head of FX, who, you know, the drink was flowing, tongues were wagging, you know how it goes. And he revealed that the previous week he had to sack his most successful trader. Now, this was they had hundreds of FX traders at the time. So I'm like, why? You know, the obvious question, would you do that? And he said he faded everyone in the trading room.
That's how he made his money.
Fired.
Yeah. No, that hedge fund you were talking about, they fired me.
Yeah.
I was the only person in that place that made money when I was there.
He said he was creating such a bad atmosphere.
Yeah.
He was getting represented by all the heads of the desks coming to him saying, you've got to fire this guy. The morale effect is...
Yeah.
And he said he made more money than anyone else. But he saw, you know, he was literally, they described it as he was going around spotting the pain trades and taking the other side.
But I mean, that's how you make money. So do you want to make money or do you want to play games, you know? And at a big bank and all that stuff, you know what I mean? You have this job and you're the head of all these people. And the more the people that work for you, the more you get paid. You want to play games. Okay, so fire the most successful trader. If you want to make money, that's a different story, right? I try to take it from that perspective, and that's why I work alone. You know, it's the same thing that I worked at a hedge fund. I'm sure I ruined the morale, okay? But I wasn't there for the morale. I'm there to make money, as cold as that sounds, right? That's what this is about. You know, that's what trading is about at the end of the day, right? You want to do something else to help society, by all means, you know, do something else. But if you want to trade, then, you know, it's cold, you know, it's cold. I'm sorry. And like I say, in social situations, that doesn't work, right? You can't trade a social situation. You know what I mean? If I go to my wife's house for Christmas dinner, and I'm taking the contrarian view to all these people, then all that happens is I ruin the whole dinner. You know, I didn't make any money out of it. I didn't prove any points because no one's going to just say, oh, you know, maybe you're right. No one's going to do that. They're going to dig in deeper, right? So all that happened was I ruined the dinner, you know? But in this game, I'll ruin the dinner all day, okay? I'm just trying to make money. So this is a safe place for me.
You know? You're just reading the tape. You're playing the percentages. You're reading the tape. You're following the system and process you have. And you know, I think, as I tell everyone who comes into this job, you know, it's not about predicting where the market goes.
No.
You know, that's, you're in the wrong job. Be an analyst if you want to do that, by all means.
That's right.
You know, you're never wrong. You're never going to be wrong as an analyst.
That's
right. Wonderful job.
Yeah, that's right. The market's wrong. You're right.
Yeah.
Doesn't work in this game. Doesn't work. The market's right. You're wrong. I mean, you can't argue, right? So, no, it's a fact. It's a fact. And that's what people really don't get about this. I mean, you get those all the time. Oh, I knew the market was going to go up, man. I should be a trader. I'm like, okay. You know, great.
But there's a lot of people out there actually that have made a lot of money, you know, in the past couple of years.
Sure.
Because they've won a lottery. You know, they bought.
But are you going to keep? There was a lot of people that made money in 1999, yeah. Too. Okay.
That's the point. You've got to have a process that is repetitive over time, not it works once. You find that lottery ticket.
You know, a bull market makes a lot of people geniuses, as we all know. Right?
Yeah.
Everyone's a genius in a bull market, right? I moved to Chicago in February of 2000. My kid went to some preschool. I became friends with a guy who worked at the Chicago Tribune. He wrote, I forget what section he wrote in. It wasn't the business section, but he was a super smart guy, super educated guy, very great writer, one of the top writers at the Chicago Tribune, right? He was telling me he had like a $15 million portfolio in the stock market. I mean, writers don't get paid that much money, man. You know what I mean? And I'm like, dude, this is a bubble. Do you understand? This thing is going to crash and crash hard. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know, but I'm only in like the blue chips, you know, so I'm not worried about it. Blue chips. Nortel Networks was a blue chip back then. It lost 98% over the next year and a half, right? What was the other one that everybody used to play? I forget, but whatever. You know, all the stocks that he listed, four or five stocks, they all lost 90%. These were the blue chips, you know, over the next 2 years. So did he hold on to that $15 million? You know, there's not a chance in hell, right? But was he a genius of the day that we spoke, sitting on $15 million in cash as a writer of a newspaper? I'm sure he felt like he was doing pretty good, right? It's all a question of, are you going to hold on to it? And again, this is something I know because I've been there. I've done it. I've done that, right? I've done it. I made a bunch of money when I first started trading. I was 24 years old, and I was trading the Hang Seng bull market in the early 90s, and I was a genius, man. I went out and bought a Porsche, and I got ready to live the George Soros life. I'm like, George Soros, you know, here I come. I'm 24. At this rate, I'll catch you in 5 years, right? You're going to turn, you know, 100 grand into freaking $2 million, man. Now I'm going to turn this 2 million into a billion in the next year, right? And of course, that's not how the story ended, right? But that's how it starts. And it's self-reinforcing too, right? I must be smart because I'm making money. I mean, the whole NASDAQ thing, I always laughed at because the NASDAQ was ridiculous long before it topped, right? People are like, oh, well, why didn't they sell? I'm like, if you had the mentality of selling back then, you never would have made that $15 million to begin with because you would have sold. If you were going to sell because the market was overvalued, you would have sold a long time ago, right? So if you held it till now, you're clearly never selling, right? And it can go in half. You're not going to sell there. It can go down 70% and you're not going to sell there, right? And that's kind of what happened to all those people, right? So me, on the other hand, I was making crap money during that whole NASDAQ run up, right? You know, I think in like 99, I was running a fund and I think we made like 13%. And we went out and marketed to people. And back then it was a new fund and I was a younger guy. And, you know, we're trying to get high net worth people because I wasn't getting institutions, right? And they were all laughing at me. Oh, you made 13%. I made 13% last week. What the hell do I need you for? I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to make 13% every year, dude. And you're going to lose all this money, right? That was my marketing ploy when I was 27 years old, which wasn't very successful, as right as it ended up being. You know, look, the worst thing that can happen to you when you say things like that is you're right. Now the guy's going to hate you even more, right? So I think I finally was able to get over that marketing issue, you know, in time. But, you know, essentially that's what I was always telling people. How do you make money? Well, I find out what people are, like you are doing and I go opposite. Who's going to give you money telling them that to their face? You know? Nobody, right? Even though it's true, you know, but the people that will are people that are experienced, that have seen this, you know, that have been involved in the markets and seen that and are secure enough to want to make money and not be proven right, you know, and don't care if I come across as a jerk, right? Hey, he might come across as a jerk, but if he's making me money in my portfolio, what do I care? I'm not going out to dinner with the guy. I'm not asking any of these people to go out to dinner, you know, I don't hang out with my clients, you know. So long-winded, but that's kind of what I'm trying to say.
Was that about being secure enough?
I mean, at the end of the day, we can get into the psychology of that all day. You don't even want to get me started on that one.
But you were always secure. I mean, you were happy to go and be the person who stood up for authority, stood up against the bosses, didn't go with what they wanted to do. So you must have had a lot of personal security about yourself. You know, you probably didn't give a toss what people thought or said.
Or maybe I was just a jerk. I don't know. You know what I mean? Or maybe who the hell knows what it was? Maybe, you know, I had a father that didn't pay enough attention to me. Therefore, I had to use a defense mechanism to make it like I don't care, right? I mean, who knows what it is at the end of the day? I'm not a trained psychiatrist, right? Although I come from a family of them. And I like to call myself an amateur psychologist. But who knows really what it is that makes that happen? But I, you know, I was writing a thing this morning that's been going through my mind. So I wrote it down. It's already on my computer. But with this whole idea of belief system, to me, people develop belief systems, be it political or whatever it is, right? Based on their own psychological misgivings, you know, to compensate for those psychological misgivings, they develop a belief system, right? And the stronger their misgivings are about themselves, the stronger that belief system becomes. I truly believe that, right? Here's someone who takes this strong political view one way or the other, right? Why are they taking that political view? Well, because whatever happened to them growing up or whatever it was, whatever affected them in a negative way, rather than face it, right, they develop these strong defense mechanisms against it, right? Which is normal. And then that's how they develop these views, right? The world must be like this because that means that all the things that I was going through pain was not because of me, it was because of that. So the world must be like this, so I'm going to believe in that. You know, and the people that I know with these strong, strong, strong political one-way thought processes are, when you really break it down, you know, most of them are people that have these sort of huge insecurities in their background, right? Whether you want to talk about it or not, you know, and it's okay. Everybody has strong insecurities, but do you want to face them or do you want to build a wall around them? And that's up to you. You know, maybe building a wall around them is the easier way. You know, why face up to it? Why face up to your misgivings when you can just build a wall, a big defensive wall around it and not have to face up to it? Maybe that's a better way to go through life. I don't know, you know? And am I guilty of building the, I must be because I'm a human being too, right? The difference is I try very hard to find when I'm doing that. I don't know if you can find when you're doing that, but I do try very hard. Am I thinking this because I really think this, or am I thinking this because I'm trying to make myself feel better about myself, right? And if it's the second one, then I try to dig deeper and say, you know, maybe that's the wrong way to go about it. But I do believe, and again, I could be completely freaking wrong, but I'm no psychiatrist, but I find that that's where belief systems come from, you know? Everyone wants to be like they have these moral belief systems. I'm like, look, everybody thinks that they're moral and they're doing what's right for the world, right? You can be the most liberal person in the world and you're going around and you're working soup lines and you're doing whatever to help human beings and you think that what you're doing is to help the world, right? But I know people that are super conservative that also think that what they're doing, I mean, they're going to church and you know what I mean? They're doing their thing because they think that they're a good, everyone thinks they're a good person, right? They're not doing things because they think they're a bad person. I mean, maybe a mass murderer, but most normal people, you know, whether you're conservative or liberal, they all think that they're a good person. They're doing the right thing, you know? So how do you then say that, you know, anyway, that gets into a whole nother situation, but
it does feed into that point about, you know, I think to do this job well, you have to be secure in yourself because, you know, you're going to be wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, we as a species hate being wrong.
Yes.
You know, it means so much negative, you know, our whole self-esteem. So
That's what always confuses me. Why is that? What's wrong with being wrong? You expect to be right all the time? Nobody in the history of the world has been right all the time. I'm wrong all the time. Okay, so are you, whether you want to admit it or not. You know what I mean? Everybody, nobody's right all the time. And if you think you are, how is that so hard for someone to say, I think I'm right all the time? Well, you know something? Maybe that's a ridiculous concept. So maybe I need to reevaluate that, right? Is that so hard to get someone to understand?
If people can start to do that, though, and take that on board. I mean, I you know, when I was a trader, I used to come up with this phrase, learn to love your losses, which I share with a lot of people. And part of the reason was it just made it easier to live with them.
Yes.
And it was really powerful in helping me sort of to grow as a trader. But, you know, until then, I hated them. I feared them. It's like, you know, I must be some sort of a jerk if I keep losing money.
Yeah.
But actually, it was no, you know, you've got a process and it's wrong most of the time. And that's okay because over time it wins.
It's all about over time. But, you know, the point is, you know, until you get to, like, I'm going to draw down now. Well, until I get out of that drawdown, as far as I know, my process doesn't work anymore. You know, when I get out of that drawdown, okay, then I can maybe sit back and be like, hey, my process does work and this was just a drawdown, right? So, you know, it's hard. It's psychologically very, 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 very hard. And I was saying to my wife when I was in such a bad mood last Wednesday, when that CPI number hit and I had a horrible day, right? And I really shouldn't have had a horrible day, but the markets did whatever the hell they were going to do. It wasn't like I was super long stocks or anything like that. I had a nice portfolio of stuff on and the dollar didn't do whatever. So I lost a bunch of money and she's like, and I'm a lot better now. She doesn't know because she's my second wife and we've only been married a few years. I'm a lot better now than I used to be. You know, we used to call it the cover pull. You know, I'd have a bad day and the next morning I would just pull the covers over my head and I couldn't even get out of bed, right? Now I can, for a number of reasons, including a lot less leverage than I used to have, I can get up and I can face it and I can deal with it. And also I have I have a little bit more confidence in my process over time since I've done it for so long that it's going to be okay. But, you know, I was in a bad mood that night. And my wife's like, you know, blah, 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 why is this bad? I go, you know, I don't mind so much having a losing day, okay? I know that that's part of the process, and I know that that's inevitable, right? What I mind is that when my instinct is just completely wrong, I'm looking at my portfolio, and I'm going, okay, if the CPI number comes up bigger than expected, I might lose some money here, but I'm going to be okay because I have this and I have that, and I'm just totally wrong across the board, and my instinct is totally wrong. I'm like, that bothers me. Because that means I don't know what I'm doing, right? And if I don't know what I'm doing, then what the hell am I doing, right? And then, of course, what happened? That was Wednesday. Thursday, Friday, I had massive days, and I ended up having a good week, and I ended up having a good week when everybody else was losing money, which is exactly what I'm supposed to do. So ultimately, I did exactly what I was supposed to do. But for that one night, right, which at the end of the day, it was just random. You know, the markets sometimes are just random, you know? That one night I was in a super, super bad mood. And fortunately, it only lasted 24 hours.
And how do you manage that? I mean, did you break away from the market? Do you step away? Or I mean, how do you manage yourself in that state? Do you guess put up with it?
I don't drink, but if I did, that's probably what I would do. Let's put it that way. There's other things besides drinking that one can do to relax and take their mind off of things. And that's not to say I'm taking heroin. I'm not. But let's just say that if I was a drinker, I would go have a couple whiskeys, right? Because all you can do, you know, you just need the time to pass, right? I mean, like I said, all I had to do was get through the next day. The next day, I made all that money back, right? I didn't know that was going to happen, right? But, you know, you just have to get away. What I picked up in the last couple of years was I picked up guitar, right? Which is something I always wanted to do. I like music. I picked up guitar. So I could sit there and I could play my guitar and take my mind off it. Although that ends up being a lot more theoretical than not anyway, because I'm in a really shitty mood because I just had a shitty training day. I can't sit there and play guitar because I'm so pissed off, right? You know, it's like a vicious cycle. But it does help. You know, I'll sit here and watch TV with my wife at night, and I'll sit there with my guitar. If I'm sitting there in front of the TV, that's what I'm always saying. If I'm sitting here in front of the TV, I might as well have the guitar in my lap, right? And practicing something, right? So that helps. You know, it's all just a matter of getting your mind off of it, right?
Exactly. Hobbies are, other interests are so important for balance, aren't they, in this world?
They're extremely important for balance, you know? I get a lot of, I don't get a lot of compliments on my personality from people. I get a lot of compliments. People like to say that I'm a good father, even though I went through a horrible divorce and my kids hated me for it. But in general, I try to be a good father. But I think that's what it comes down to, right? It's like other interests that have to keep your mind off it. You know, like today, I'm going to see my stepdaughter's track thing. Do I really care about a high school track meet? No, but it's another interest. You know, children can be a great thing to have an interest in, right? I mean, loving your children, what's a better interest than that, right? So, yeah, I think other interests are very important. As much as I sit here, like I say, literally 18 hours a day in front of these things, but you have to have other outside stuff. Otherwise, you're going to drive yourself crazy, you know? The market...
Yeah, you need to be in control of the market rather than the market being in control of you.
That's it. And it's a very hard thing to do, especially when you're losing. You know, they always say, this is an old adage, but when you're losing, you can't get away from it because you're trying to use every ounce of energy to get the money back, right? But when you're winning, you don't even want to get away from it because you want to keep making money and you want to keep rolling the dice, right? So, like, it never ends, you know, it never ends. And I've accepted that, you know what I mean? It is what it is. You know, I've accepted all these things at this point in my life. At 53, I've accepted all of it. This is going to kill you. I know. Okay. I mean, my wife is going to come in here one day and I'm going to be face flat down right on my desk with the markets open. And that's how I'm going to die. Okay. So that's how I'm going to die. Well, what are you going to do? You know, like even when are you going to retire? I retire from what? Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I don't know what I'm going to do. I used to play golf, but I don't really anymore. I could again, but I just don't know what I'm going to do. I'm sure that I will die in front of these screens. And in fact, I hope I do because that means I haven't blown out and people still trust me to manage their money. And therefore, one day I'll die in front of the screens. And okay, so what? Then at least I'm dying.
Maybe they put a screen. Maybe they put a screen in the coffin just in case.
I'd like to think at that point I could get some rest. But maybe not, you know? I mean, I have it all right up here, right on my screen right here. I have a file for my wife, you know, the death file. I go, you walk here, and I'm face down. Just move me out of here. Open up the death file, and all the instructions are right here. Here's the client's numbers. Call them up. Tell them I died. Here's the broker's numbers. Tell them I died. Here's whatever the hell else. You got to deal with the banks and all that, and you'll be good, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we care about at all of it, right? Is that our family's going to be okay one day, right?
That brings us back to the passion you have for this job. You know, it's not a job for you by the sound of it. Like Mark said earlier, it's a vocation. It's not something you retire from because you love it so much. Why would you want to retire from it? It's something that you, by the sound of it, you want to be doing until they cut you off.
I don't even know if it's want to be, but it's like, I just don't know what else. What else am I going to do? I don't know what else I'm going to do. You know,
you did leave it, didn't you? You did leave it. You did leave it almost a couple of times, and you came back almost.
I actually left it. When I closed my CTA down in 2014, I left for a year and a half, which was the first year and a half that I had not traded since I started trading when I was 22 years old, right? And that's really, I think, where the lesson was learned, truthfully. I got divorced. I moved away. I bought a farm. I got into some other businesses, right? I loved the place I was living. I met a girl, right? After a 15-year, you're talking about 15-year, 365 days a year of horrible marriage, right? And you've given up on the concept of love and you've given up on the concept of women, right? When you go through something like that. And hopefully neither one of you have gone through that. And hopefully neither one of you would ever have to go through that. But I'm sure you know people that have, right? I met a girl who I was totally in love with. She restored my belief system in love, right? And I'm married to her now, and I love her just as much to this day as I did then. Met a girl, lived in a place I liked, wasn't trading, had another business that was making money. I didn't need the trading at all. And in the middle of it, I was like, I didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, something was wrong with me. You know, I was like going, I thought it was midlife crisis. I was like 45 years old or whatever, 44. I'm like, this must be what midlife crisis is. I wake up every day and like, I'm feeling this weird depression. You know, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do today. I don't know what I want to do today, you know. And as it turned out, as soon as I started to manage an account again, I was good to go, you know. So that's really what it is. It must be that I like doing it and that's what I want to do, you know. And even when I started managing an account, I mean, you're talking about at my CTI, I was managing whatever, 200 something million dollars. When I was at the hedge fund before, I was managing $400-500 million, right? I started managing an account again, $2 million account that somebody gave me to manage. It didn't matter. It didn't make a difference to me. It wasn't a question of how much I was managing or how much money I was making. That had nothing to do with it. I had enough money. You know, it had nothing to do with it, right? It was just that I was back playing the game that I like to play, doing what I like to do, you know? So I'm lucky in that way. You know, I know a lot of people that don't like what they do and they have to do it because, well, they feel like they have to do it because whatever, they went to med school and they spent all that time and money, so they have to be a doctor. You know, they went to law school, they spent all that time and money, so they have to be a lawyer, right? And their kids are going to college and they need to make that money. They can't just walk away. So in a way, I'm lucky that I found that. Now, with that, just like anything else in life, comes a lot of cost, right? Every benefit has a lot of cost, right? There's been a lot of cost getting to that point, right? When I was 30 years old, you know, I was dead broke. All my friends were making all kinds of money, working for Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. And you know what I mean? I knew I was smarter than these guys. And I knew I knew more about markets than these guys. But it didn't matter. I was broke. They were making, you know, $1 million a year. Who's the idiot, right? But again, it's the long game. They're all now still working for those places at one third or one quarter of what they used to make before, right? Have spent all that money that they made before anyway, so need to keep doing that, need to keep going into the work every day and hating it. And I'm sitting here now, you know, semi-happy, right? So it's the long game, you know? It's the funny thing about the long game. You don't learn it until it's too late, right? I think in a way I was fortunate enough that I had to do it that way because there was no choice. Goldman Sachs wasn't hiring me. You know what I mean? Morgan Stanley wasn't hiring me. Didn't matter how many of my friends worked there and brought me in to meet their boss to hire me. Hey, here's a smart guy. He knows a lot about the market. They didn't want me around, you know? They didn't want me sitting next to them. Who wants a guy like that that doesn't shut up sitting next to them all the time and who's so contrarian, right? Nobody wants somebody like that sitting next to him. So I didn't have a choice but to play the long game. If I had that choice, I probably wouldn't have been able to do it, right? I would have had to take him one of those jobs. Well, what's my wife going to say? We're sitting there living in some crappy, you know, two-bedroom apartment with three kids, right? And Morgan Stanley could offer to pay me whatever, $500,000. What am I going to say? No? I can't. You know, I can't. But I didn't have that choice, so...
What would you, I mean, the ultimate question, we get a lot of people listening and they're listening to you right now and they want to hear your advice that, you know, you're clearly someone that many of them would aspire to want to be. You know, but many of them at the beginning of their career, you know, they're looking, you know, we see it all the time. I want to make 100% a week sort of thing, just to exaggerate slightly, but not far off it. I want my Lamborghini at the end of next year. You know, they've all got these unrealistic expectations and dreams which have been sold to them by the advertisers and marketers. So what would your advice to them be?
I mean, I always tell guys, look, George Soros is pretty famous for being a pretty good money manager, right? What's he made? 23% a year? Okay. I'm making up a number, but I'm assuming it's somewhere around 23.5% a year. So do you think you're going to be better than George Soros? No. Okay. Well, then you better. Okay. Then let's say you're a little worse. Let's say you end up being a great trader. You make 20% a year. Well, then that's what you better plan on living on. So if you're trading $20,000, right, you're not going to live on 20% a year. You can make 20% a year for the next 20 years. If you start with $20,000, you're getting nowhere. You're living your whole life broke. And if you make 20% a year for the next 20 years, you're probably one of the better traders out there, right? Meanwhile, you can't live on it, right? So that's the point of, oh, I'm going to make 200% a year. You're not. George Soros made 20% a year, okay? And he's one of the greatest guys that ever lived, right? What's Tudor made? 15% a year? You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to do that. So you better be prepared for that. Don't live in this dream world of you're going to make 200, 300% a year for the rest of your life, because you are not going to, right? And if that's your plan going in, then you got another thing coming. And I know you won't listen to me, because I know you know what you want to do and you're going to make it happen. But the truth is, you ain't going to make that happen, right? So that's thing one to remember, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, it's the whole be careful what you wish for. You want to, look, I'm the same way. The only reason I agreed to go into Jack's book was because the first book I ever read was his first book. And my dream at 22 years old was, oh my God, I want to be in Market Wizards, right? And then you get to 52 and it's like, oh, who gives a crap about being in Market Wizards anymore? I just want to sit here and manage money and make money. I can give a crap about being in the book. But when he contacted me, truthfully, the ego comes into play. And I'm like, geez, at 22, that's all I ever wanted to do. And here I am. I've been up with him. All my friends are like, dude, come on. You got to do it. When we were living in Hong Kong, you quoted Market Wizards every single day. It's all you ever talked about. You wanted to be Bruce Kovner. You wanted to be Paul Tudor Jones. You're not going to say no now. So I was like, all right, I'll do it. So I did it. But people got to understand, man, the path is not smooth. You know what I mean? I go in, my big thing these days is the whole physics thing. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? So if you think it's just going to be this smooth path from here to the next Market Wizards book, you got another freaking thing coming, man. You know what I mean? I went through hell and back more than once, you know? And it was because of hell and back more than once that allows me to get here, right? Why my drawdowns are so low, why my discipline is so good, you know, is because of the hell and back thing when they weren't, when my drawdowns weren't low and my discipline wasn't good, right? You almost have to go through that first to get there, you know? No one's born a great trader. You're just going to start trading great from day one and you just, hey, smooth sailing from here on out. Because the more success you have at it, you know what I'm going to say, right? I mean, the better you get at it, the cockier you're going to get, the more sure yourself going to get, and then the market's going to hand you something that you never freaking were ready for. The greatest thing you can do is lose money when you start trading, right? I was in the unfortunate position of I made money when I started trading because Hong Kong was in a massive bull market. I started trading the Hang Seng Index when it was at 5,000, and 2 years later, it was at 12,000, okay? So sure, I made a bunch of money because I was young and stupid, and I leveraged the hell out of it, right? And I made a bunch of money. Does that mean I was smart? It actually means I was stupid, as it turned out. You know, I mean, you know, it took me 8 months to lose all that money, right? But if I had lost the money first, then maybe I would have learned the discipline quicker to ultimate success, right? So that's the second thing I would say. You know what I mean? Be ready. Yay, get in the next Market Wizards book. Absolutely, do it. But be ready for what that path entails. You know, because it's, for me at least, it's hell. I don't know. Maybe Bruce Kovner wasn't. Maybe he just started kicking ass at Commodities Corporation right away and it just went as smooth as could go. I don't really know. But for me, it didn't. But again, as a wise-ass contrarian jerk, you have to learn your own lessons, right? Because you don't listen to anybody else. So I had to learn my own lessons. You know, unfortunately, I like to think I had an open enough mind that I accepted those lessons. You know, I was watching some TV show the other day. Trying to think what it was. And the guy said, what's the one lesson? The guy was super successful. The guy said, what's the one lesson that you would want to impart on people? And he said, make your mistakes once. Right? That's it. It's not that you're not going to make mistakes. You are. Just don't make them again. Right? With me, in trading, a lot of times I like to say, I've made so many mistakes trading that if I can just eliminate the mistake, I'm like running out of trading mistakes. You know what I mean? I should be like the perfect trader at this point because I've made so many mistakes. I could just eliminate them one by one. And I used to keep notebooks, right? And highlight the mistakes and all that. If I could just eliminate all those mistakes over time, then I'll have none left and I'll be perfect, right? Except that there's always a new mistake to be made, right? But if you can eliminate some of them, right? Then those are mistakes you won't make again, right? So I think that's the lesson, right? Make your mistakes. Make them once and learn from it. And then you can get better, just like at anything, right?
That was fantastic. That was great. And I'm going to hand over to Mark in a minute, but I don't know if you had any more questions you wanted to ask first, Mark.
No, I think, this has been a podcast of listening to Jason, right? Listening about the journey, right? Listening to the lumps and bumps, the dilemma, the passion needed to pick up on something that you believe in is the thing that's going to make you money, and kind of sticking with it and sticking with the discipline about it. And it's hard work, you know, that's not easy stuff, going through that data and picking out the value. But also there's an observational aspect to it, right? You're looking around at all sorts of things for going the other way, and some of it's going to be against your instinct. And that's a difficult thing as well for a lot of people. So, you know, I think that I've learned a lot of lessons from this. And what's unbelievable is that we're talking about someone that's not in a professional firm at the moment, right? We're talking about someone that is, you know, sitting around and finding his own pathway without any staff, right? To your pleasure, and doing it yourself. You know, I said that before, you light up like a Christmas tree when you talk about it. And I think that's palpable. But there's a lesson learned there that other people can, with that commitment, they can light up like a Christmas tree, maybe become a wizard one day. We can all become wizards, but, you know, we've got to cope with a whole bunch of stuff to get there.
So someone told me when I was in college, I used to say it all the time, you can do anything, you know? And I always believe that, right? And there are plenty of times where, and my thing, especially after I read the first Market Wizards book, my thing was, I want to be sitting in my house with no boss and no one to deal with managing money in the futures markets, okay? Here I am. Okay, I'm doing that. And from here to there, that seems great, right? And it's not over yet, because I have a bad, you know, year, and these guys will all fire me, and I'll be, you know, trying to figure out what the hell to do again. But hopefully that doesn't happen, but I'm there. But like I say, it's a long road, and you have to put up with a lot of stuff to get what you really freaking want, right? A lot of stuff you have to put up with, right?
And just quickly, where can, if you can remind everyone where they can find out about you and see your stuff, because I read through your Crowded Market report, and I thought it was outstanding, and I was thinking, well, if I was a trader now, I'd be having this land on my desk every single day.
Yeah, well, it only comes out once a week. But what can land on their desk every day? I think the website is called Crowded Market Report, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if they go on there, you know, we tried to keep the cost low. You know, the guy who, I'm not really looking to make money off of this thing, but the guy who put it all, I don't know how to put together websites and Discord chats and, you know, so the guy who put it together, you know, needs to make some money. Otherwise, where's his motivation, right? We tried to keep it pretty cheap, but they get a report every week, but what they really get, to me, the value that I didn't even know about when we started with this, was this Discord chat thing. They can get on this Discord chat. I'm on there all day. I'm on there right now, right? But it's not just me. There's a bunch of other people on there too, and we're all learning our lessons as we go. And these guys have actually brought up other data sets, you know, to use for contrarian trading, and that I don't look at, right? And we have some really good people on there. So that's really the place to go. I at first was like, do I really want to deal with this? And the guy was like, look, you write the thing anyway. It's not any extra work, and, you know, whatever. You can make some money and whatever, and you can help these people that you can't help because there's too many of them. Okay, so I was like, okay, I'll do that. That's fine. But truthfully, I love it because of this chat Discord site and the people we have on there. I'm becoming a better trader because I am putting on the newsletter every week the trades that I'm looking to do, and I talk about why I do them. I tell them my process, right? I don't care, because they're not going to steal it, because they can't. I can hand you this. You're still not going to be able to do it, because unless you were born some kind of lunatic contrarian, it's very hard to do this stuff, right? But, you know, I give them all that, and then I have to stay honest to it. You know, I have them there making sure I'm staying honest to that, you know, which is helping my discipline even more. So that's great for me. Also, these guys are talking about other data sets that measure, you know, different things. That's great for me, right? And we're all kind of helping each other as we go. It's been really a really cool experience. So that's where, if they want to learn about what I do and learn about trading and psychology and even talk about their experiences, you know, and their thought processes, it's just a great place to do it, I think. So
brilliant. And we'll put the links to that on our blog that goes with this episode. Just go to the AlphaMind blog if you're listening, and you'll see the show notes for this particular episode, or go to Buzzsprout where the show notes are as well. And there'll be links to Jason's website and the other details. So, Jason, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure and an honor.
Yeah, it's been nice talking to you guys. Keep in touch. You guys are nice guys.
Thank you for listening to this week's Alpha Mind podcast. If you have enjoyed this podcast or any of our past podcasts, we would be delighted if you could rate the podcast on whichever service you use, or even better, leave a review. Thank you also to our podcast sponsor, the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. You can go to technicalanalysts.com to find out more about their services and to explore becoming a member of the STA. As a reminder, at Alpha Mind, we focus on trader and investor personal growth and development. We offer coaching programs which are geared towards developing the key human, personal and behavioral skills that are so vital in helping people grow their performance and take their trading or investing to a higher level. Our clients come from a range of backgrounds from across the world. These include leading portfolio managers working at some of the world's largest hedge funds, asset management firms and sovereign wealth funds. We also work with investment banks and some of the world's largest commodity and energy trading businesses. Our clients also come from a myriad of other backgrounds, including family offices, proprietary trading firms, as well as many serious private retail traders. In addition to trade and investor coaching, our services extend to executive, leadership and team coaching with a specialist focus on financial markets, investment and risk businesses. To know more about our services, visit our webpage alpha-mind.net or email us info@alpha-mind.net or visit the Alpha Mind blog page for more contact information. If you would like to sign up for our regular newsletter, you can do so on the page link at the top of the Alpha Mind blog, and you can also listen to our podcast on our new Alpha Mind YouTube channel. Finally, you can follow us and connect with us on social media. We are active on LinkedIn in our own names, Stephen Goldstein and Mark Randall, or through the Alpha Mind group on LinkedIn, which has over 15,000 members. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handles are AlphaMind101 and AlphaMind102. We wish you well, stay safe, and have a great week.